Hello, everyone, and welcome to my interview for the day. Now, let me first clear up something that I think is very important. Ollie came to me over the weekend and threw down the gauntlet, a challenge, if I may. He mentioned that he wasn't going to be able to make today's regular recording for us, and since we couldn't be able to record our usual bit, he wanted to compete and see who could get the better guest. Of course, I booked the majority of the guests on this program and have done so for the past 4 years, so I really could have went anywhere I wanted to today and beat Ollie's guests no matter what he was able to pull. So today, on a day when he went with Mexican football, and me being half of the Mexican, I can appreciate that, but still, I decided to go with a legendary club who is known for the silverware racked up in their trophy case. I chose to go with a club who is going through their own form of the Odyssey as they travel through the lower leagues of Scotland on their return to the top flight of Scottish Premier League. Yes, today I am taking you on a journey with a man who practically speaks for the masses of Rangers Football Club supporters out there, the host of Hearts in Hand, Mr. David Edgar. David, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you for making the time.
Raf, quite frankly, that was an almost Shakespearean build-up there. That was just magnificent.
It took me about 30 minutes to write it, David, so I mean, I hope you appreciate it.
It was worth every second you expended on it.
Thank you very much. Now, as I just said, David, Rangers are on a bit of an odyssey as we make our way back to the top of Scottish football, one season at a time. And along the way, we are facing many different challenges on and off the pitch, to be quite frank. We meet and defeat clubs which most Americans, myself included, would have trouble pronouncing the names of, like Erdronians and Stenhousemuir. See, I just butchered it again, and you even have a regular guest on your program who is a Stenhousemuir fan. And I still can't pronounce it properly. But anyways, I digress. We are also experiencing some wonderful new things. For me, one personally is the Hedge at Brecon City. I absolutely love it. As we make our way back to the top, David, what sort of fond memories might you have looking back at the journey we're currently on?
I think it's exactly that. We've grown up in the land of big stadiums and glamorous matches, and that's great. I mean, it's fantastic. You know, you've recently just seen the Super Bowl, and it's glitz and glam, and you know, dancing girls and all that sort of thing. But there's something real about going to a stadium where the PA is basically a guy with a 1980s ghetto blaster playing a cassette tape, and he's playing the theme from the A-Team, and it gives up halfway through, and everyone just laughs. There's something about going, and you think, right, I'm going to use the laboratorial facilities, and you ask the gentleman where it is, he directs you, and it's a Hedge. And you have to make do as best you can and hope that it's a number one, and that's the only number that needs to be involved in. And it's just going into a town, and maybe there'll be more Rangers supporters going than actually live in the town. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're being taken over by these invaders from a different city, trying out the local kisses and trying out the local ales. It's been strange. Do you know what it's been like, Raf? Mm. You know that bit in Goodfellas when they're all in prison, but they're in prison together?
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like being, we're 18 months into a 3-year prison stretch, but with all our friends.
Sure. It must be kind of a foreign thing for these fans as well to have suddenly, you know, masses of media kind of asking for credentials, and they've never really given out credentials before. And sometimes, you know, just, yeah, it's insane to see myself. I absolutely love it. And, I'm enjoying the journey. Actually, I've come to look at it with a positive light. I can actually enjoy this. Now, you're not one to shy away from the fact that Scottish football seems to be a bit of a laughing stock these days. Even when you look at the Scottish Premier League, you see their quote-unquote best team, okay, currently. Celtic, unable to fill their stands, embarrassed in Europe, and knocked out of the League Cup. Is there any way to save football in Scotland at this point, in your opinion?
It's a tough one. The game in Europe is changing massively, and I think that the Champions League, we're only really seeing the long-term effects of it starting to go through the rest of the game. Now, basically, you get so used to the big glamour games, you get so used to the big players congregating in the big leagues that your own domestic product looks a little shabby by comparison. You know, the way I would describe it would be we're the equivalent of the CFL to the NFL because we're very close to the big product, and you know we're remarkably similar in a lot of ways. But you need to be fairly hardcore to want to watch it. And for kids growing up now, when I was a kid, you know, the players who were playing in England or Spain or Germany just seemed exotic. I only really got to see them in European matches. I only really got to see them at a World Cup or a European Championship. Now they're on TV every week. Right. It's as easy for my nephews to keep up with how Barcelona are doing as it is for them to keep up with how a team in the same league as us in Scotland are doing. So it's tough. I mean, if you're 8 years old, to be honest, your local team or Barcelona or Manchester City, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Who are you going to pick?
whoever you're deciding to play with that week on FIFA 2014.
Exactly. And you turn on the TV and it's these amazing stadiums and glitz and glamour, and it's, you know, Negredo and he's playing against Van Persie and all that stuff. And we're saying, do you want to come and watch us play Stenhouse Muir? Right? And you know, it's a three-hour drive. It's going to rain. It's not covered. They don't actually have a stand. They've got a concourse, and it'll probably be rubbish. it takes a certain sort of attitude. But equally, and you've heard me rant about this on the podcast before, Raph, equally, football's not supposed to be fun, goddammit. Football is supposed to be suffering and pain, right? And a football fan is like, I don't like this modern thing of enjoying sports. And I know there's some teams over there. It's like, see, before the Red Sox got good, that's what sport was. Sport was coming up every year, and knowing that you were going to get beaten, and it didn't bloody matter because you had to be there. It was part of who you were. It was part of who your kids were. So a thing that people have to understand that we're not doing this to enjoy ourselves, right? If we were enjoying ourselves, there's a whole host of sports we could be watching. The great thing about football is, see when you watch tennis, right? And it's perfect shot, perfect shot, perfect shot. Somebody makes a mistake, and that's how the point's won. Football's different. It's all crap, and it's the one moment of beauty that actually wins a match. That's the difference between soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, and all other sports. In any other sport, golf, it's perfection with the odd mistake that leads to the winner. Football's entirely the opposite.
Sure.
And then you have a game like Manchester United Arsenal where it's there are no moments of beauty, and you have to put up with that. You've lost 2 hours of your life to this nonsense, and that's part of it. So yeah, it builds character.
I'm going to stick with the Scottish football for now. I'm going to show how we as Rangers fans can flex our muscle, knowing that we follow other sports, other leagues around the world. And you're no different. I hear it on the podcast every week. You kind of give a little bit of insight into other football that you watch. But we'll get into that later. Now, I mentioned that Celtic were knocked out of the cup at the hands of Aberdeen, which gives us Rangers fans some hope that we may, just may, have a real shot at some League Cup glory this year, thanks in part to a favorable draw. How much does the Scottish Football Leagues need to have Rangers a big part of this cup now that Celtic are knocked out of it? Because, let's be honest, if the Old Firm and their supporters aren't in it, then are their fans interested at all?
It's one of these difficult situations in that people will tell you one thing and the statistics will reflect another. Mm. So people will tell you that they will follow the game and that the top league won't be affected by Rangers being in it and the cups won't be affected by Rangers and Celtic not being in it. But then you look at attendances and you look at viewing figures and they don't match up to those boasts. It appears to be totally different. So people can tell you, oh, no, it doesn't matter. But the cold reality is that it does. From the point of view of a neutral, in any sport, if you've got a big team playing a smaller team, you've got that, you know, underdog thing to root for. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've got two small teams, you may not really care who wins it. And I think it's the same in our game. You need to have, you know, heroes and villains. You need to have people to cheer for and cheer against. You need to have competition. If you don't have competition, then why are we bothering with this? You know, no sport benefits from a monopoly. None. You know, there's nothing good about it. And if you see upswings in any sport, you know, it's not when you've got an unbeatable champion. You know, you see attendance at events go up when anyone can win it. It becomes far more intriguing. Whereas if you know that it's going to be pretty much, you know, one team, then there's not that level of interest. And I think you've got that at the moment in Scotland. You know, the league title's all but finished already, even though the season's got another 3 months to run. So, I mean, that's ludicrous. How you intend to... I mean, if you went in the movies and it had an hour to go and you knew the outcome, you probably wouldn't hang around for the last hour.
That's fair, yeah. Now, on that point, now, we might as well flex your muscle right now. The English Premier League, probably one of the more open title races in the most recent history that we can remember. How entertaining is this season for you as pretty much a neutral, right?
Yeah, definitely. I love the EPL because exactly that. I don't have a team in it, and I can just enjoy the football for what it is without that sort of stomach-churning horror of your own team losing or winning or your rivals doing the same. It's been great because really for the last 2 decades, there's only ever really been a title race between two teams. I can't remember a three-way title race, right. Probably. So in the last quarter of a century, really, you've always had one of two teams, generally Manchester United and another, would be going for it. This year, I think you've got three really, really disparate teams, and I think that makes it exciting. On the one hand, you've got the best manager, Chelsea, you know, by some distance. You've got the best squad, Manchester City. And then you've got arguably the bigger club, you know, in terms of attendance and whatnot, and Arsenal. So you've got these different things. You've got Mourinho with his win-at-all-costs philosophy. You've got Pellegrini, who's, you know, had a different philosophy in terms of the way he wants to play. And then you've got Arsenal who have a completely different philosophy in terms of the amount of money that they could spend that they choose not to, which is in direct competition to both, you know, Chelsea and City, that they want to do it, but they want to do it on their terms. You know, they want to do it playing a certain way and spending, you know, within their means and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you've got these really distinct philosophies clashing, and none of them seem to be able to get the jump on the other. You know, City looked as though they were going to blow them away, but a couple of defeats, they can't do it. Chelsea looked as though after the win against City that we thought, right, well, here they go, they're going to go on, and then they drop points. Arsenal keep seemingly be about to drop out, and, you know, they obviously got really horsed by Liverpool, but it happened to them earlier this season at City, and they came back and won their next six matches. I think City are, you know, on paper, if they get it together, they're the better side, but when they lose a couple of key players, and they lose two to their company, and they're with Aguero, for all their talent, they're not the same. Chelsea, although they're the strongest team when they come up against the other big sides, I think they struggle to break down packed defences, you know, when teams are putting 8, 9, 10 men behind the ball because they don't have a good striker. And I think of all the three, Arsenal are the most capable of beating everybody else.
Sure.
Like, if Arsenal played City and Chelsea, you know, every week, they would lose far more often than they would win. But I think that they are the team who are less likely to drop points against the lesser teams. So it's really fascinating. I mean, I don't know, it'd be tough to pick a winner at this point because all three of them seem capable of winning it, and then they all seem capable of blowing it as well.
Right, and it's also who wants it the most. I mean, with Chelsea and some of the draws that they've picked up, I mean, look, there you guys go, okay? We stepped off of Scottish football for just a second to give you a little bit of relief, but I'm going to jump right back to it, okay? You talk on the podcast, David, about how you tend to stay away from mainstream media, the sports pages, the sports channels of the like, But what do you make of this turn to clubs becoming their own kind of media outlets and supplying their fans and those interested with news and media straight from the horse's mouth?
I think it works in tandem with the development of fan media, because what you can then get from the club, you're not going to get analysis. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get debate about the club. They're going to just release press releases. They're going to release positive stuff, as is our view, as corporations do. You know, you're not going to... You know, you're not going to hear a thing from Apple saying, you know, we're making a lot of money, but we haven't really released anything innovative for about 5 years. We're not going to say that. But you'll get that analysis is elsewhere. Right. And I think what's happening is the traditional media over here has been slightly squeezed out because it's their own fault. It's their own hubris that's caused it. That for years, they they very much felt that they had more power than as a simple conduit of news from the club to the supporters, and they were also slow to engage with supporters. So when you had this thing for instant engagement, social media, then fans completely abandoned the media. There was no, over here, there's been a very quick decline of newspapers and a very quick decline of radio. And the reason that that's happened is there's no loyalty, there's no brand loyalty to these people because there's no fondness for them. They kind of ran on this antagonistic, you know, the sort of shock jock mantra of that they would try and annoy the audience and that would cause controversy and that would generate calls or interest. And that works for a while, but, you know, there's a reason that, an American example, the reason Johnny Carson was on TV for 50 years is because people loved him. Mm-hmm. You know, if people are watching, you know, Howard Stern, for example, they don't have that bond, you know, they don't have that fondness, and it's exactly the same here. So now what you tend to find is that they get their news from the club and they get their analysis from fellow fans. And that doesn't leave the media with a role.
Now, I know I'm taking you well over the time that I've already kind of asked you for, but I did want to touch on this last question for you. Heart in Hand is not afraid to call out the shortcomings of Rangers' boardroom, the owners, even the coaching staff. You've been able to be critical of a legend, really, in Ally McCoist, which is very refreshing in my opinion, because I think we need that ability to be critical of these people. I know this is a little bit more involved than maybe that's what we have time for, but have we learned our lesson after being exiled to the bottom of the Scottish Football Leagues? Do we have our house in order and our finances balanced, or are we treading on thin ice again?
Yeah, no. In a word, no. There's no clear direction coming from the club, and there hasn't been over the last few years, and that, I think, is to be expected. You don't go through the sort of trauma Rangers went through and then just emerge a few weeks later and everything's back to normal. And I think that in this kind of modern world where we want everything instant, we don't have the patience to say that something's going to take 2 or 3 years. There's also the doubt about the motivations of the people in charge. You know, are they wanting to create a stable club that's going to run 10 years, or they want to make short-term profit and then get out? So until that becomes clearer, it's hard to say. From a fan's point of view, it's difficult because things have changed so much. 20 years ago, Rangers were genuinely comparable with a Manchester United in terms of stature, in terms of ability to attract players. The money in the Premiership has, you know, taken the game on a new level, the money in Spain, the money. But fans still want, they remember those days and they still want it to be the case, and they don't understand that. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. I think, you know, that was the peak of that. What we need to do is start to bring through young players, start to create our own, you know, and Scottish football in general, you know, you need to create your own young players rather than trying to buy in ready-made ones from abroad. Mm-hmm. You need to make the product more exciting. And that's the main criticism of, on the playing side of things, the manager, is that, you know, in the 90s, it was win at all costs. And that was fair enough because it was a league worth winning, and it was, you know, very competitive, and we had great players, Gascoigne, Loudon, etc. But now we're in the first division, we're playing part-time teams, we should be playing better football. We should be looking at the art rather than just the pure result-based element of it. We need to make this game attractive for us in this country, because if it's not attractive, it's never going to be as glamorous as its rivals again. It's never going to happen. We just don't have the finances to do it. I'm a big fan of pro wrestling, which I usually keep under my hat. But if you're starting a pro wrestling league, don't try and do the WWE.
Yeah.
Because they're better at being that than you are. What you want to do is make the product good.
Right.
Look as good. It won't be as glamorous, but make your product interesting and it'll find an audience. And that's what Scottish football needs to do. Don't try and be like a light version of English Premiership, because no one wants that. Try and be the best league you can be, full of good players. And that's what Rangers need to do. They need to make sure that they're going, do you know what? It's a pleasure going to the match to watch us, because we get to see some good football and we get to see our team trying 100% to entertain us. Mm-hmm. And we've proven the last 2 years, Raf, you know this, how loyal we are. If they do that, then we'll be there every week.
Sure. David, I cannot thank you enough for making the time for us today. I know I held
it's
you
a pleasure,
well over the time that I had suggested in our emails and stuff. But for those who are Rangers fans, obviously you've probably heard of Heart and Hand. Go download the podcast. Go download the app in the iTunes store. Go pick up your Paddy Power free tenor and all that good stuff. I know I have. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can get my book on Kindle. It's available in the U.S. Kindle store, so they can buy my book there.
That's right. I mean, if you're not a Rangers fan, there's plenty to enjoy just by listening to Heart and Hand. You'll get a fantastic perspective on the world of football, the global game. They cover all sorts of fantastic things in Heart and Hand. You may be slightly offended at certain things, but in the best possible way, absolutely. And so, again, thank you so much. As for someone here in the States who supports Rangers, you know, I was kind of lost a little bit in the sense that, you know, I would buy my jerseys straight through the, you know, the Rangers mega store, and I bought my Rangers TV and I didn't know what else I could do. You know, I even bought my brick at Ibrox, you know, in my daughter's name, just so I could be a part of this team and try to do my part. And you, I think, have helped me kind of just make sure that I'm involved with my club and make sure that I'm aware of the situation and keep aware of the situation. And that's, I think, the most important thing that any supporter of any club can do. So thank you very much, David.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Take care and have a fantastic day. Don't work too hard, David.
You
take
too.
Cheers.
Anytime, my friend. Cheers, Raf. Speak soon.
That was David Edgar, again, the host of Heart and Hand. You don't have to be a Rangers fan to listen to Heart and Hand. You know, just like you don't have to be a complete soccer fanatic or nut to be a World Football Daily listener. We have some fantastic guests who obviously go and touch on football and then go on to various other different things at any given point in time. We just enjoy the game. We enjoy sport. We enjoy the way it captivates everybody, the world, really, in so many ways. It's such a global thing these days that sport is, that it really, it's just inspiring. It's an awe-inspiring thing, and I get really excited, juiced up, jazzed up to be a part of it. And I mean, really, again, I'm really excited to have talked to David, and he definitely went kind of well over the allotted time that I had kind of suggested to him, but I blame him because he was the one who was talking so much. So, again, thank you for making the time for us, David. And, Juice, I highly doubt that you'll be able to top that interview.